The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Well, welcome back as we head into Hour 2. It is a delight to bring on my good friend. This will be the second time you hear him today in Phoenix, Larry Elder. Larry Elder is, of course, the executive producer of the great movie Uncle Tom. We'll talk a little bit about that as well. But first, I wanted to talk to you, Larry, about this project you have coming up on September 17th, Constitution Day, Unbiased, the Unvarnished Truth Behind Race in America, you're doing with Candace Owen. How are you, Larry?
I'm doing great, Seth. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for being here, but more importantly, thank you for all you do. It's just tremendous work. And, you know, I'll do it in reverse order, maybe go back and forth a little bit. In Uncle Tom, your movie Uncle Tom, I took a special note to see where Candace Owens was crediting you with being such a mentor and teacher to her. It must be just a delight to see a student do so well and the two of you doing so well together in one of the most critical conversations. We need your two voices. So thank you for everything you do.
You got it, Seth. And this may sound self-serving, as I'm about ready to be self-serving, but my fingerprints are around lots of places and over the last 25, 30 years of my work. For example, Steve Miller, who's one of President Trump's top aides, first came on my radio show when he was, I think, 13 or 14 years old as a high school student at Santa Monica High here in L.A. I thought he was so amazing. I had him on again and again and again, and over the years he was on something like 69 times, I know, because he kept count. And Andrew Breitbart publicly credited me with getting him into the field of commentation. Ben Shapiro has said the same thing. I was the first person to put Michelle Malkin on either radio or TV.
Wow.
She was on my radio show.
Wow.
The editor-in-chief of Breitbart, Alex Marlowe, was my intern, and I gave him his first sort of conservative position.
Wow.
And so all of these people are kind of like my coaching tree that Bill Belichick has. I've got a little tree. And, of course, I credit people like Walter Williams and Thomas Sowell and Shelby Steele for giving me the intellectual firepower that I'm using as well. But it's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful feeling to answer your question in a very long way.
No, we all stand on the shoulders of giants, but it makes teachers proud to see their students do so well also. My bragging rights is I'm the first person to have you on in Phoenix today. That's what I get to say. Those are mine. We'll come back to Uncle Tom in a second, but tell us about Unbiased, the Unvarnished Truth Behind Race in America, what you and Candace Owens will be doing on September 17th. Everyone can watch. Anyone can watch. They go to 960thepatriot.com to sign up. But tell us about what we can expect.
Well, I think the title pretty much says it all, The Unvarnished Truth Behind Race in America. And the unvarnished truth is that racism has receded as a factor to the point of almost insignificant in contemporary American life. Now, it does not in the media, it does not with Democratic politicians, and there's reason for that. The media does it because I think they believe it drives ratings. They also want Donald Trump defeated, and if they perceive the country to be more and more racist under this president, it will achieve that objective. And I also think, Seth, that a large number of these young journalists have been raised under what I call the access of indoctrination. That's Hollywood media academia that have told him year after year, session after session, class after class, movie after movie, TV show after TV show, that America is intrinsically, institutionally racist. And so I think a lot of them genuinely believe it. And so when you see somebody like George Floyd being knelt on for 8 minutes, later on died, you see somebody like Jacob Blake being shot in the back, and the media, of course, spends a lot of time on this, you get a skewed perception of what really is going on. And what bothers me, Seth, is I look at these athletes that I admire as athletes, like LeBron James, who plays out here in L.A. for the Lakers, and Doc Rivers, who's a coach here in L.A. for the Clippers. Both of them responded very emotionally to incidents where black people were either shot or killed by the police by saying things like, why does this keep on happening? Doc said, why do we love America when America does not love us back? And LeBron James, after that jogger in Georgia was killed, said, we are afraid to leave our house. Now, a couple of things. I've been on the air almost 30 years. Every single year, somebody calls me up who identifies himself or herself as black, and they say, Larry, quote, you don't speak for black America, close quote. Larry never said he did, any more than Rush Limbaugh has to say he does not speak for white America. That's just bizarre. Yeah. But I watch the Doc and I watch LeBron James. They use words like we, like us. Nobody says anything.
That's right.
Now, but more importantly, they don't know what they're talking about. I watched a speech once at that Doc Rivers gave. Very eloquent speaker, Seth. He used facts, stats, data, outlining what he thought the upcoming season was going to be, what he thought were the strengths and weaknesses of his players. Where is that same analytical mind when it comes to this issue? Because if he applied the same mindset to this issue, he would have to ask himself, how often do Americans have interactions with the police every year? 50 million times. Mm-hmm. Out of that number, how many Americans are arrested? 11 million. Out of that number, how many people assault police officers? 60,000 officers assaulted every year. Out of all of this, how many people are killed by the police? 1,000. Of the 1,000, what were they doing? Almost all of them were resisting with a weapon or resisting violently. When you get down to white cop, unarmed black man, you're talking about less than 4% of the total, and unarmed does not mean not dangerous.
Right.
Michael Brown was unarmed, but his DNA, for crying out loud, was found on the officer's gun, indicating he was trying to get the gun. So when you look at unarmed black men who were not dangerous, not reasonably perceived as dangerous, versus white cop, you're talking about less than 4% of that 1,000.
Larry,
and it should be pointed out, too, there are at least as many unarmed whites killed every single year as are unarmed blacks. Now, 25 unarmed black men were killed last year, best we can figure out.
Right.
That's two per month. Seth, that's two reasons to have protests every single month. If you wanted to do that for whites, you could do that because there are more than two per month. And the fact is, nobody cares when it's a white person. And again, it is rare for the police to kill anybody, let alone a white cop shooting an unarmed black person, let alone an unarmed black person who is not legitimately perceived as being dangerous. It almost never happens. By contrast, of the 15,000 homicides every year, half of them are black victims. That's 681 per month versus the two per month who are killed by the police. And again, almost all those police killings are either found justifiable, or the officers were found not guilty, or they didn't get an acquittal because people appreciate the split-second situation that officers are in.
Right. All well put, and we can't hear it enough, Larry. And if I were to tell you from my perspective, when we're talking about unvarnished truth about race in America, it's just what you outlined that I worry about the most. Tell me how much you worry about it. When Colin Kaepernick or when LeBron James, they talk about the police as the enemy. They talk
right.
about blacks being hunted down by the police. At a certain point, that message does seep through that, in a sense, may very well be catalyzing so many of these violent incidents.
Absolutely.
It's instructive, isn't it? It's instructive to
Harvard economist
someone.
Named right. Roland Fryer.
Yeah.
He's so brilliant. He is the youngest tenured professor ever in the history of Harvard. And Harvard is the oldest college in the country. That's how sharp this guy is. And he just knew that it was true that the police were using deadly force disproportionately against blacks just because they're black. And he was kind of surprised nobody had done a study. So he did. And not only did he not find out that the police were not doing this, he found out that the police were more hesitant, more reluctant to pull the trigger on a black suspect than on a white suspect for commonsensical reasons. They are afraid of being called a racist, being sued, being prosecuted, possibly being put all over the newspaper as America's next white great bigot.
Yep.
And so it's the opposite of what these people are saying. Now, what happens in the real world is that because officers are being accused of racism, it's called the Ferguson effect. Heather McDonald's talked about this. Cops pull back for fear of being accused of being racist. Bad guys know it. Crime goes up. The very same people that Black Lives Matter claims they care about are the ones who are hurt. The other thing that happens is if you're a young black man and you've been told all your life by Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, Louis Farrakhan, ABC, NBC, Joe Biden, Obama, Michelle Obama, that cops are out to get you, why would you comply? Why would you follow their instructions and be docile? Why wouldn't you be anxious? Why wouldn't you assume something bad is going to happen? So you're making a situation far more volatile that would not be the case if the people were simply told to comply. Comply, you won't die. Virtually all of these high-profile killings could have been avoided had the suspect complied. I'm not hearing LeBron James say that. I'm not hearing Jacob Blake say that? That was a man who was shot. He gave that address from his hospital bed, and everybody was talking about how philosophical he was, change your life. How come he didn't say, I wouldn't be here if I had complied? Here's what I want you guys to do next time. Don't put yourself in a situation where you're going to be paralyzed from the neck down. Comply, and this won't happen to you. He didn't come close to saying that. This is just bizarre, Seth. It's just bizarre.
We're talking to Larry Elder. Larry, it almost sounds as if rather than a policing problem in America, we may have a different kind of problem in America, probably a resisting arrest problem in America. Is that possibly the case?
I couldn't agree with you more. I'll give you an example, an anecdotal example. There's a town out here called Rialto in California, 100,000 people. Yeah. It pretty much reflects the demographics of the state in terms of its percentage of whites, Hispanics, blacks, and Asians. And a few years ago, they mandated that the officers wear a body cam. And initially, they were reluctant, but they did. And after a year, what happened? Police complaints against officers fell 90%, 90. Officer use of force fell 50%. And it wasn't because the officers were being watched and they changed their behavior. Their behavior was the same. The civilians changed their behavior, Seth. It's a crime to falsely accuse a police officer of abuse. And so citizens, when they thought they were being filmed, stopped lying and stopped resisting. And as a result, the officers did not have to use force either. So everything improved when people got body cams. And the beneficiary was not what the activists think. The beneficiaries were the cops, because the cops have been lied on. We know that Dorian Johnson, Michael Brown's friend, lied when he said, hands up, don't shoot, had a whole bunch of people wearing T-shirts with that expression on it.
Turned out to be a myth. Ask Joe Biden, you'd get a different history lesson and a wrong one. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. For energy, health, vitality, improved and boosted immunity, you want balance of nature. I take it every single day, and I just take it once a day. Vegetarian capsules with tens of thousands of vital nutrients from 100% whole food, plants, fruits, and vegetables. 10 servings of 31 different fruits and vegetables, from pineapples and papayas and oranges to carrots, broccoli, cayenne pepper, garlic, kale, all organic, no chemicals, no GMOs, picked at the peak of ripeness. It's my favorite product that I endorse, and they have a great deal where they're offering free shipping and 35% off any new preferred order of their fruits and veggies. That's what I take. That's what my friends take. That's what my family takes. Give them a call at 800-246-8751 or go to balanceofnature.com. Make sure to use discount code BALANCE. Energize yourself naturally with fruits and vegetables from Balance of Nature. I was talking with Larry about this virtual event September 17th he's doing with Candace Owens, Unbiased. You can go to 960thepatriot.com to learn more about it. And in my monologue, I had made reference to this interview Joe Biden had done with Cardi B a couple of weeks ago. And I've just can't. Ben Shapiro got into it in attacking Cardi B's latest song. Candace Owens took it one step further, and I'm glad she did, to talk about, you know, what it is doing and saying to the black community when you're Joe Biden and you use Cardi B as your entree or as your entrance and vehicle, if you will, into the black community. I can't replicate and say it the way Candace does, so let me just give you Candace. This is from an excerpt of an interview she was doing on this topic.
People, but unfortunately today that's the majority of what rap has become, right? And so and I completely agree with your assessment about Cardi B. It is one of the biggest insults. If black Americans are not insulted by the fact that Joe Biden, who has been hiding in his basement for the entire year, made an appearance and came out because he was going to do an interview with Cardi B. Do we have nothing better to offer? I mean, this would be akin to Donald Trump saying, I'm going to give no interviews, but he came up and he decided to give an interview to Justin Bieber. right? I mean, which I actually, Justin Bieber, I'm sorry. I know you are a Christian man. I don't even want to put you in the same boat as Cardi B. But it would be absurd, right? White America would go, what is this? Why are you being interviewed by Justin Bieber? And it's because you're pandering, right? You're pandering. You look at Cardi B's Instagram, you see she has millions of followers, and you think, okay, this is an illiterate person. And if I appeal to this illiterate person and she does, like she literally did in the middle of this interview, they think she's cool, she's hip just by sitting here and taking this interview, black people will vote for me. It's basically saying, black people, you are stupid, you are dumb, and you're so foolish. I mean, do you think, what if she just said in the middle of the interview, Joe Biden, can you name one Cardi B album? No, Joe Biden, do me a favor, just one Cardi B lyric. He couldn't do it. Of course he's not, because he's being handled, and they're saying, black people like this person, this is what they're into, and so here you go, talk to her. Same thing with Hillary Clinton, when she went in the Breakfast Club, and she said she had hot sauce in her bag, right? She didn't know what Beyonce's song that came from. One of her handlers said, say this, right? Probably got the questions ahead of time. Say this. Say you keep hot sauce in your bag. Right now, Beyonce's song is trending, and it's hot sauce in my bag swag. And she looked like a fish out of water and said it. It is demeaning. It is pandering. It is ridiculous, okay? And she asked pointedly ridiculous questions. I want lower taxes, but I want universal health care for all. She had no idea what she was doing, and yet both Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden made the time to sit with her because they believe black people are stupid. And black people that thought, yay, that's a win. No, it's not a win. It shows you that they still believe that you are so stupid that they couldn't find many of the amazing intellectual black people that we have in the world to sit down with and ask them tough questions. An interview with Condoleezza Rice, right? An interview with Larry Elder. You know, even if you want somebody that is a Democrat, that's fine. There are way more intellectual black Democrats you could have sat down with that you chose an illiterate rapper, because that's what she is. She's illiterate.
Well,
yeah. Thank you, Candace Owens. I think that's right. I think it is shameful that we have elevated Cardi B to the level of a Leslie Stahl, and people want to know how it is that Cuties has become controversial. They want to know how it got aired in the first place and how it has become a political football, if not a conspiracy theory, to try and condemn it, criticize it, or tell Netflix to just the executives of Netflix, maybe not show something you wouldn't even show. You'd be embarrassed to show your own children, or for that matter, any woman you know. Boy, the Democrats like to talk about being the enlightened party. They are not. They are not. They are the vulgar party. Let me see. I've got just a short time here real quickly. Let me do this. Let me go to calls on the other side of this break. That way you get your full chance to ventilate. 602-508-0960. And as we go to break, let me put in a word for Squad Pod, which is a great company for all your video and social media conferencing needs. Great features. I love the feature where you can call back a message that you send. When you're using SquadPod, go to squadpod.com/Seth for all your video and social media conferencing needs. Collaborate with all your teams, video conference, share files, screen share, chat privately. People can't even discover that you're having a conversation on SquadPod unless you're or they are invited into it by you. Squadpod.com/Seth. No third parties, no monitoring. We'll be right back. There's the old Maynard Ferguson shake. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, 602-508-0960. Shake, Seth, and six. It's going to get you in trouble, all that alliteration. Here's Robin, surprised to get me out of trouble. Hi, Rob.
Hi, Seth. Hi, Seth. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good. I love your monologue because it sort of goes back to when I was reading your book, American Greatness, about the culture wars, and that, you know, Senator Moynihan had once pointed out, you know, the central conservative truth is that it is culture, not politics, that determines the success of society.
Right.
And then Breitbart kind of took it a little further down, politics downstream from culture. Yeah. But before I continue, I must tell you that Mrs. Robb has finally, after years and years of reading the newspaper, has finally decided to stop her subscription to the Arizona Republic because of its bias. And I actually heard her say that to the subscription person who understood but didn't necessarily, you know, approve of somebody else canceling a newspaper subscription.
Wow.
And, of
wow.
course, he was talking about, you know, okay, well, you know, you could subscribe to the Sunday paper, to the Wednesday paper that has all the, you know, sales for all the stores. But, no, I'm very proud of Mrs. Robb because she stood by her principles. She finally realized that, and again, you talked earlier about
it's a paper
Hispanic.
That makes no
yeah.
effort, almost no effort,
yeah.
but for an occasional column that they have from John Gabriel, they make no effort to appeal
yeah.
to at least a third and probably 50% of their potential readership. No effort.
Well, exactly.
And to kick them in the teeth.
Yeah.
Instead.
And I think that's one yeah. of the reasons why she decided, you know, enough is enough. I've had this stuff for years, but the time has come. And, of course, we're retired, so, you know, we're looking at, I think it's like $48 a month or something.
Is it that much?
So, I mean, yeah, that's like a couple of 30
to get kicked in the teeth, you know. You can pay me $25, I'll come over and slap you around.
Yeah, well, you should.
Yeah.
And by the way, yeah, thanks for your comment about my low back surgery went
sure.
fine.
Sure, you're doing okay? You doing better?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they took a screw in my lower left SI joint, sacroiliac joint. So I guess I can officially say that I'm screwed right now. That's just a funny joke.
Yes, I get it. I get it.
Okay, good. But going back again to, you know, your book, American Greatness, which, by the way, I don't know which part you or which part Chris had actually written, but what was interesting, too, about, you know, the culture before politics, I think one of the points had to do with Donald Trump, who had been probably more familiar with culture.
More familiar with it, in it, of it, understood
yeah.
it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so he knew better than any of the experts in D.C., conservative or, you know, leftist Democrat,
yeah.
What middle America wanted, what they liked, what they disliked. He was obviously a political, you know, novice, I guess, but he not only became a...
He was a political novice, but a cultural expert.
But a cultural expert.
Yeah, and if it is true that culture determines the success of a society, he would be
yeah.
the expert that would know it better and understand that proposition better than others.
Well, and I think that's why he succeeded so well, because all of the experts, you know, from the think tanks on both sides to the so-called expert pundits that you see on TV and all the different talk shows, well, not so much talk shows on radio, but some of the other talk shows, they were experts in their own insular world
mm-hmm.
that didn't even take into account what the voters were
mm-hmm.
thinking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and one of, I think, the other points that you'd made in the book had to do with talk radio people
yeah.
on this side that did have their finger on the pulse, because, you know, you talk to the truck drivers, the everyday workers,
yeah.
and you got a sense of what they were thinking about and what was important to them.
Let me hold that thought with you as I go to break. I'll come back to you, Rob. Let me just hold that and come back to you, because I know you're not done, and I'll let you finish. As we go to break, though, think about, too, right after the election, the New York Times, CNN, they all put out these public statements that they're going to try to do better to understand the American people, because they clearly didn't understand the portion of the public that voted for Trump, 63 million votes. What a hell of a confession to make. What a hell of a statement against interest, representing yourself as the media for the people, of the people, by the people, to give the people information, and you have to state that you misunderstood 63 million people and you're going to try to do better to understand them, and then didn't even bother to do it, just double down on the earlier mistakes. We'll pick up. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. If you're thinking about selling your home, you want to call James Wexler of JMG Real Estate. James guarantees to sell your home at market value, or he'll pay the difference. He can also make you an upfront guaranteed offer on your home within 24 hours of you reaching out for him for maximum convenience. He can do that for you. He sells more homes, over $500,000, than any other agent in Phoenix and Scottsdale. The Phoenix Business Journal ranks James the number one selling individual agent in Arizona. Give James Wexler a call if you're thinking about selling your home at 480-386-0711 or visit him online at jameswexler.com. That's James Wexler, WEXLER.com. We were talking with Rob about culture and politics. Go ahead, Rob. Thanks for waiting.
Yeah, and, you know, your comment, thank you for keeping me on.
You bet.
I was just very concerned about the fact that that Joe Biden goes to Cardi B, and I don't know, maybe it's pandering, but he probably doesn't really understand how crass and vulgar her stuff is, and yet that's, I guess, considered, at least by the Democrats, sort of a mainstream cultural thing that, you know, our culture has allowed to go mainstream, which is kind of depressing, really, because, you know, it's terrible stuff, and it's not even music.
Well, think about the notion that if he doesn't know, and you're likely right about how vulgar and crass and pornographic she is, certainly the people that put him together with her, I'm sure he'd never heard of her until about a month ago or perhaps even 3 weeks ago, that the mm-hmm. people around him, the people who would staff his administration, know. You know, they say policy is personnel. Think of the kinds of people he'd bring in. Go ahead. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then on top, you know, speaking of culture, I ran across this article in Vox, Vox.com, obviously a left-leaning site, where they were talking about how Beethoven's Fifth Symphony put the classism in classical music. So now we're talking on Vox, the left-leaning periodical, about how Beethoven's most famous work is now a symbol of exclusion and elitism in classical music, and it's enough to make your head explode. I mean, how stupid is that? But that's, again, part of the culture. People read this stuff, and people believe it, and people, I guess, approve of it. But going back again to your – this is a great book. One of the things I learned was that it wasn't just, you know, the media and the Democrats that got Trump wrong, but it was the conservative side that did as well, because they were focusing more on whether or not he was conservative instead of Donald Trump actually was talking about what's good for America.
Right.
And again, you got the voters, and they're thinking more about what's good for America, and they probably don't care that much about whether or not he's conservative, which he has been, I think, more than probably any other guy since Reagan.
Yeah, Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, and again, you know, we talk about the media all the time, which now I think, and it may have been mentioned earlier, that they have now, they're viewed by normal Americans as a self-important but ineffectual laughingstock, and that the present state of American journalism is such that it must first take the log out of its own eye before presuming to pluck the splinter from everybody else's.
Mm-hmm,
And I totally agree. I mean, I think that the media is pathetic. They're very biased, and they only present one side, and yet millions of people still buy into their nonsense and their lies and their misrepresentation. So between the culture and the media being, you know, very one-sided, the real question, I think, is, well, how do we counter all this? How do we stop this? How do we end this? And I think, you know, again, the only thing I can come up with in my little mind is, well, we have to fight back, and we have to push back, and we have to call them out, and we have to, you know, whether the other side believes it or not, we just have to keep throwing stuff at them until they start understanding that they've been lied to, they've been misled, and they've been dumbed down for so many years. But I don't know exactly, again, this is what concerns me, if we're sort of at the end of the Roman Empire days, you know, the Colosseum with the lions eating the people or whatever they did back then, or whether we have a chance to get America back on track again. And to me, the only way we can get it on track again is not only just to reelect Trump, but change our attitudes regarding culture and morality and education, you know, which is, again, a big thing, I think, for both you and I. And again, I don't know whether we'll succeed, but I guess that's one of the great mysteries.
We'll find out soon enough, and it'll tell us a great deal about our country. You said something that reminded me. My old professor is the editor of the Claremont Review of Books. Charles Kessler was in a debate circa 2016 and was supporting Trump and was being beaten up for, at that time, the questions of and around Trump's commitment to conservatism. And it looks like you may have dropped, but I'll just make the point here, Rob. What Charles Kessler said was, it's almost unnecessary to ask about Donald Trump's commitment to conservatism. His worldview is encapsulated in his motto, "Make America Great Again." And to the degree that even that proposition angers liberals in the left, you understand almost by default that by doing right by the country, to make it great, to want it to be great, is itself, has itself become, sadly, I have to say, in a way, a conservative proposition and a whole real constellation of conservative ideas. I say it's sad because it's unfortunate that we can't be a country, Thomas Jefferson described in his inaugural, where we are all Federalists and we are all Republicans, that differences of opinion don't have to translate into differences of principle. But when the left became so enraged with the notion of making America great again, when you had Andrew Cuomo, is he the most famous governor in New York or the most important governor of New York? Well, he thinks certainly the latter. When you had him saying America was never that great, you kind of got it. You kind of got it. One side wants to see this country thrive because it knows it is inherently great. And one side wants to transform it into some kind of ethereal or philosophical achievement of socialist paradise that has never worked anywhere else because it doesn't think, as Andrew Cuomo said, it was ever that great. One side sees this country and sees beauty. One side sees this country and sees a troubled child in need of reform school, sees ugliness, sees oppression, sees bitterness, sees degradation. It's not the way I see it. It's not the way I read our history. What we know is the other side doesn't know history. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. We're monitoring, of course, the story of a federal officer who was shot today outside the Sandra Day O'Connor Federal Courthouse in downtown Phoenix. Turns out, as it looks right now, that the shooting was not fatal, thank God, not life-threatening. It turns out we think we have a suspect in custody. We don't know more. And I'm going to do something that no other media really does, perhaps outside of this network. I'm not going to assume anything. I'm not going to assume anything. I will tell you I find things curious about this story. I will tell you the Arizona Republic did not distinguish itself in its first Twitter posting on this when it said person shot. Yeah, it was more than a person. It was a federal officer. Other than that, I will make no assumptions because I don't want to be the first to be wrong. Steve is in Tempe. Hello, Steve.
Hi, Seth. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. Regarding the Arizona Republic, I stopped taking it when Janet Napolitano was elected as their governor, just for that reason. They were so blatantly obvious in their support for her, and not that it isn't their place to be able to write stories in favor of one candidate over another, but it was just so bad at that time, and it's gotten way worse, believe me. But I haven't missed it one bit. I mean, you get your news from other sources, and you just get used to that, and that's just the way it is. And Seth, what I wanted to talk to you about was what you guys were just talking about regarding the Netflix series.
Yeah.
And isn't it interesting how, you know, Barack and Michelle Obama are on the board, and I don't think a lot of people realize it, but the owner or the principal of Netflix is a major, major Democrat donor. I'm not sure who it is, but I've heard that that's the case, that he supports the Democrat Party with a lot of cash. And
I don't doubt it. The Obamas, I don't know if they're on the board or not, but they've made over $60 million in their deals with Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've gotten extremely wealthy just through that one deal. But isn't it interesting, you know, I go back to that quote. That
Susan Rice is on the board. I know that. I know Susan Rice is on the board.
Yeah, she is. And you go back to the quote about Michelle Obama, when they go low, we go high.
Yeah.
Well, they've gone really low on this.
Yeah, they just don't know what low is. You know, you and I have a different definition of low to them. You know, we just do. We just do. But I'll take my definition. If this isn't low to the Obamas, I hate to think about what low would mean. But we have an idea now of what the Democrats think should be mainstreamed, and it's Cardi B and cuties. I want nothing to do with a culture that thinks that should be mainstreamed. I'll be right back.